You're listening to Garibaldi Red, a Nottingham Forest podcast brought to you by Nottinghamshire Live.
Hello, welcome to Garibaldi Red and the latest of our World Cup specials as we catch up with former Reds fans, players and coaches and see what they're up to now and reflect on their time with Forest at the City Ground. And delighted to be joined by former Reds coach Stephen Reid. Stephen, how are you doing?
Oh, good, Matt. Just looking at the intro there and looking at some of the images actually from Wembley, brought back some great memories.
Yeah, I'll probably start there because you left not long after Wembley, and we'll talk about what you're doing now. But there's that pretty iconic picture of you that you put on Twitter now on the, I think it was on the bus afterwards with the beers and the cigars and whatever it was. In your mind then, were you definitely on the way out, or were you tempted to stay?
Yeah, that was tempting. Obviously, when you sort of achieve what we did, one of the most memorable days in my football career, and obviously in recent years for Forest as well, it made the decision even harder. I think that few days after the final, especially, managed to get away with the family and was mulling it over. But I think, like I've said in the interview that I've done before, and I know Steve said in the pieces that he's done, that it's something that we've been speaking about for some time in the build up to the end of the season. Anyway, it wasn't thrown on Steve or the club at the end of the season. It was discussions that me and Steve had been having since the start of the year.
So tell fans what it is you're doing now. You're working on, like, is it the mental health side? Is it with individual players? Do you go into clubs? How does it work?
I've done a little bit of both. I've presented it. I've been back to Forest, so I presented to one of the academy groups. It was the A-teams. I've been into a couple of other clubs just to present. And the presentation really is about sort of the challenges of being and going on that journey into becoming a professional footballer. What I'm also doing, I'm also on the journey to qualifying as a fully trained counsellor. I'm on the level 3. And then once you finish your level 4, you become fully qualified. I'm doing a few different bits and pieces, really. But the bit that I'm probably enjoying the most at the moment would be sort of some of the individual work with players. And I've also worked with a couple of coaches as well. It's sort of dealing with a lot of the stresses, the pressure, the anxieties, and just helping others on the journey in football themselves, and hopefully giving them some tools to help them. It's not solving it, but it's just helping to manage some of those bumps in the road.
So is this elite athletes in football, or do you think it translates across all sports if people want to speak to you?
Yeah, at the moment it has been just football. I've worked or been involved with a couple of organisations over the last few months, one of which is Sporting Chance. So I've been down to see them. I've been to a couple of events with them, and they deal with everyone in elite sport, no matter what sport it is. So it's definitely an area we'd like to expand on, different sports people. And I guess once I'm fully qualified as a counsellor, you're effectively then kind of free to help, no matter who it is. Doesn't just have to be in sport.
Mm-hmm. Can you kind of contextualise your road to this place in terms of your own mental health? I know you've spoken about it before, but it's something that's gone back throughout your career, I take it.
Yeah, it's help that I've needed even before I started as a professional. From a young age, I needed that bit of support, that bit of help with counselling. As I got into sport, became more the sports psychology and performance side of it. And since retiring from football, sort of stepped back into getting a bit of help with counselling as well, and through the PFA. So it's something that I've always seen as really important in all walks of life, not just sport or football. And it's something that I've sort of been thinking about for a while, and something that I just wanted to pursue a little bit more. And to do that, it's virtually impossible to do it. on the coaching journey as well, because of the time it takes to take part in lessons, to do your work, to fully commit to it. I've, you know, sort of needed this step away from it to pursue this a little bit more.
I remember interviewing an England cricketer a few years ago, and he was saying, in his first call up, he spoke about imposter syndrome, and he said he'd been blighted with it throughout his career. And I didn't really know what it was. I thought he meant you thought your teammates thought you were rubbish, but he was saying it's like everyone from the tea lady up thought, you know, in his head, he was thinking, you're a joke, you're not good enough for this. Is that the kind of thing that you suffered with, or is it more along the lines of anxiety and stress and panic? If you don't mind elaborating.
Yeah, all of it really. But I do always come back to that imposter syndrome feeling. That is, it's kind of that fear of just being found out, that you're not good enough to be there, you're not worthy of being there, someone's gonna find you out, and you're kind of be out on your ear. The way I sort of think of it now, it's taken some time, but now I use it in a way. I've used it actually probably throughout my career as that voice to battle against, to keep pushing through it, not to give up, to keep going, to prove your real self right and that negative voice in your head wrong. It's almost proving that voice wrong rather than anybody else. But I think it actually is something that's driven me on to achieve some pretty special moments in football. But yeah, I still get elements of it now. If it's presenting to a big organisation or, you know, a room full of players and coaches, you still get that, I guess, that voice that everyone gets, but it's that level that some people get more than others. You know, mine was right up the top at its worst, but some people will just suffer slight nerves with these moments. But what I've actually found out, and through practice and through working on myself a little bit, that nothing's ever as bad as what you think it is at the time, that's for sure. But it's an interesting path. It's one that I'm enjoying, but at the same time, all of the stuff that I'm doing now will still give me greater tools if sometime down the line I want to revisit the coaching or get back involved in it at some stage. All of the bits that I'm learning about now, the listening skills, communicating skills, can only be a good thing no matter what it is I decide to do next.
How's that aspect of the game evolved in your career, and how much more do you think it needs to involve around player well-being, not just physically but mentally as well?
I think it's getting there. I still think it's difficult for a lot of players to open up fully about it and share the issues that they're facing and going through. I think seeing a bigger number of players that are sharing the issues they're going through or have gone through. I mean, in recent weeks, Jesse Lingard's documentary, the bits that he shared around mental health as well. So it's definitely more out there, which for some is a massive help, because when I was playing, you saw virtually none. So I think that alone will give a lot of players comfort, a lot of coaches comfort, and that they're not going through it alone. But I think we've seen a lot of the top end doing it. I think you've still got a large group of players that won't reach out sort of through fear of, you know, losing their place in the team or not getting that next contract or next move. So still work to be done. There's some great work being done. PFA, the LMA, Sporting Chance. So there's some great organisations, some great support out there, but there's still a long way to go with it.
Do you think football's still different to the rest of society then, in terms of that, you know, you've got 30-odd blokes together in a dressing room, like you say, you don't want to lose your place in the team by showing weakness, if that's still a thing? You probably don't get in that in a lot of normal society, where you work with, you know, men and women mixed together a lot more. Is football still out on a limb in a sense, do you think?
Yeah, it's a totally unique environment. It's not normal. It's not a normal environment, really, with the pressure, with the expectations, with the anxiety. You're in a dressing room and effectively you're fighting potentially against a mate of yours to get in the team, to earn a new contract, to progress your own career, you know. So you're constantly judged, you're constantly battling all sorts of emotional stresses, the pressures of staying fit, of getting in the team, of that contract to support the family. It's not a normal kind of environment. There's still a lot of kind of alpha male type sort of characters and banter and all of that going on as well. And when you kind of taken from such a young age, from going to school and almost thrown into that environment, a little bit more when I was coming through, you sort of left school and then you're sort of straight into that environment. Now, I think players more often than not spend a little bit longer in the academy systems, but if you're a talented player, you can be kind of thrust into that world at 16, 17, 18 years old, when maybe you're not fully emotionally aware of everything that's going on.
You've got behind you, you've got the shirts that you earned through your career, you know, playing for Ireland and at the top level in the Premier League. I mean, do you miss it, the day-to-day of that dressing room now you're out of it or not?
You miss something. I definitely miss elements of it. You know, just those conversations daily, the connections with players and the coaching staff, you know, a little bit of that camaraderie in the dressing room you miss. And of course, some of them feelings of getting that 3 points, or, you know, it might be that day at Wembley that you can never forget. You miss those moments, but at the moment, those moments are not enough for me to think that, you know, I've made a wrong turn in making this decision. You know, I've enjoyed probably a lot more than I've missed in terms of spending quality time with the family, reconnecting with friends, starting a new course, helping individuals, presenting in clubs. So I've enjoyed a lot more than I've missed. But, you know, how can you not miss some of the moments that we had last season? That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, how was Wembley for you? I found it absolute torture, especially the last 15 minutes. It was an awful game. How was it for you in the dugout?
It actually wasn't too bad. I think a bit of that's experience. That was my third visit there as a coach. So I went to a playoff final with Reading, then went back as a coach with Scotland when we played England. So I think that helps. I think that helps with the occasion. And in a weird way, I almost felt at my most relaxed on a match day than any other stage during the week.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes the actual week of the training, the preparation, your video work, with the opposition, getting all your set plays organised and all the video watched with that, I think that I found more difficult than, it almost felt in a weird way quite relaxed on a match day. And I kind of felt that, as bizarre as it sounds, on that and in that playoff, I don't know whether it was a confidence that we'd done the work, that I fully expected us to win the game. You know, I just always felt that if we played as we had been doing for about 6 months overall, then there's no way that we couldn't there's no way that we couldn't go and win the game.
Did you feel it was going to be that kind of game? Because it felt like there was kind of a headwind where people outside Nottingham wanted Forest to win. Huddersfield had finished above you in the league, I think, but it felt like Forest were favourites and had the better players. Did that change the dynamics at all on the day for you, that there was that expectation or slight confidence?
I agree with that, actually. I agree going into it. A lot of the talk was about us, you know, and the build-up as being favourites, you know, the form that we was in, you know, a lot, you know, spoken about the length of time that we'd been out the Premier League. But I think Steve and hopefully us as staff are so good at dealing with that expectation and actually embracing that expectation and believing that we were good players, good coaches, that didn't really affect us. You know, we had a fantastic meeting in the build-up to the game where we kind of got all of the emotions kind of out. We spoke about it, we discussed it, players and staff. We shared a little bit of how we were feeling going into this game. And we just went in fully prepared, and we knew that all we had to do was exactly what we'd been doing for a long period of time that got us to that place.
don't know if you can hear. Can you hear that helicopter flying over then in the background?
Got a little, yeah, it's not yours, is it? Just
it's mine. I think I live under a flight path, I think. Don't worry. just last one on Wembley then. I mean, I watch back videos quite often of it. I watched one at the weekend. I found a YouTube of the celebrations and the final whistle. Have you watched it back much since?
Not the game, to be honest. I've watched clips of it. I think I actually watched back some of the set plays from the game because I was in charge of attacking set plays sort of last season. I just watched back. Yatesy almost scored from a wide free kick and watched the goal going in. And I was the same. Watched the celebrations, which were incredible. Sometimes I did the same when we qualified for the Euros with Scotland. I sort of watched back at the celebrations and back at people getting interviewed and what it means to people, almost more than the game itself. I mean, the night, obviously, we had an incredible coach drive back to Nottingham, great night. And then the next day in the city centre was, that's what you're in it for, you know, moments like that.
How'd you end up at Forest then? Because you'd coached at different clubs and you dipped out at times. I think from reading to kind of dabble in what you're doing now, then you've gone in with Scotland and looked like you had a pretty sweet gig there. What attracted you to come to Nottingham?
First of all, Chris, I've always been about having that connection with staff that I'm going to be working with. I've found on my own coaching journey, that's where I feel most at home, most comfortable working with good people. So the call actually came out the blue from Chris. Never worked together. We knew each other, obviously, through football circles, but I think I was actually travelling up for a Scotland camp. And had the phone call. And then it was looking at the club, size of the club. Then it was looking at, obviously, the position they were at that time under Sabri in the league. So I was kind of fully expecting to come in and we'd, you know, steamroll the league and sort of get into those playoff positions pretty quickly. So it was a mixture of Chris, obviously, the club, size of the club and the history of the club. You know, if it had been a club that I didn't feel was going to go and achieve something, then I probably wouldn't have bothered. I probably would have just happily stayed with my Scotland role. But there was just something about the history of it, you know, big games that I've watched in the past and the whole history of just what the club is. I think that was the main draw.
I suppose you say there, like on paper, everything looked really set up for Chris to succeed based on his, you know, his esteem in the game and what he'd done at Brighton and other clubs in the Championship. It's probably not easy for you to say, you know, go into detail on it, but is there anything specifically that went wrong when it felt like it was going to go so right?
No, I'm the same. Just fully expected it to go well. And it's not in an arrogant way at all. Because that's not sort of who I am really, but most of the roles that I've been in have just kind of have gone well. This was a real sort of introduction into a difficult year, really. It's hard to put your finger on why, and it's not making excuses, but that whole time was just weird. It was really odd during that COVID time where there was no fans there, no atmosphere to use to our advantage. Because I was a big part of obviously that coaching staff and I guess what didn't go so well at that time. And sometimes it is as basic as it's the right manager at the wrong time or however you want to put it. It just never got going. It just never seemed to click. It just never seemed to work. And sometimes that happens in football. I learned loads through that period of time, obviously working with Chris, you know, seeing how he operates every day. And I'll tell you one thing, it definitely weren't through lack of effort because, you know, still to this day, and I include Steve in that, I mean, the hours that sort of we put in, you know, under Chris was quite incredible. And the, you know, amount of games that we used to watch and, you know, time spent at the training ground, going through video and trying to get to the bottom of why it wasn't quite happening. It's just one of those that sometimes happens, that connection just never gets going, you know, because it's quite rare for Chris because, you know, as you know, pretty much all of his jobs has been a success.
Mm. You mentioned, right, thanks for doing that. I didn't want to ask that help. You mentioned right manager at the wrong time. I mean, was there a part of you that maybe thought it might be you after that Huddersfield game? We'll talk about that specifically, but that went so well. Did you fancy the manager's job, or was it destined to be Steve Cooper's anyway?
I didn't fancy it. Purely a little bit out of loyalty to Chris, I think, who I am as well. I think it probably wouldn't have sat quite right with me going and even put my name forward to take it. I actually thought that I'd probably be on my way as well. As what often happens, manager goes, a staff go, but that wasn't the case. I've got to say, though, that Huddersfield away game, the game that I did take, is probably, that's up there with the Euros, with Scotland, the England. I put that right alongside, if not just pipping it for best moments as a coach in football, for sure. The performance, the reaction from the players, the reaction from the fans, how well the game went, and to kickstart that amazing run that we went on last season. That it was an amazing, amazing day.
What was your mindset going into it? Because like you say, you thought you were probably on the way out. Is it just kind of a one and done, I'll do my best and see what happens type thing then?
It was a little bit of that. Sort of just felt like things needed a shake-up. Felt like needed to just change things around. Felt like, you know, I just wanted the players to go out there and express themselves. And that's exactly what they did. There wasn't much time because obviously Chris left on the Tuesday, late Tuesday night after the Middlesbrough game. So it was, everything happened well into the early hours that night. So that was on the Tuesday. So then it was literally a couple of days then, recovery for the players that played. Spoke to a couple of the senior players in the next day to just speak about the weekend, speak about Huddersfield, because you just got to get prepared straight away. Spoke to them about going to a back three, changing it up, because, you know, from both sides, it just felt to me that we almost needed that extra centre back on the pitch to stop us leaking goals, but also felt that we might get a front three in as well, you know, with Grabs and Brennan and Joe Lolley. So I thought it could work both ways, defensively be a bit more solid, but going forward, hopefully give, you know, like I said, Brennan, Joe and Grabs a little bit of license to go and express themselves really and be really dangerous on the counter attack.
How did you end up staying then? Because when Steve was unveiled at the press conference, I remember asking him about his coach staff, and he spoke highly of you, that he kind of made out that he'd known you for a year or two through coaching. Is that right?
Yeah, well, we obviously in the couple of years, year and a bit that I was on Chris's staff, when we had played Swansea, I knew their goalkeeping coach at the time, Martin Margetson. So we'd always have a beer after the game. And just seemed to get a real good connection with Steve. I liked all their staff, but that was a staff in particular that after a game that you're almost looking forward to just catching up with them and having a chat about the game, have a chat about football. Got on really well. And then we'd end up through the pandemic as well. Me and Steve, although we didn't know each other that well at that time, we'd always end up on a lot of the coaching webinars that were put on. So he probably thought when he got the role that I'm actually interested in the trade, interested in learning, interested in improving myself. And yeah, it's just, we just got that connection. And I've got to say, if it wasn't for Steve coming in and someone that I had that connection with, it could have been a different story. It could have been more difficult because I need to a little bit how I am. I need to be feeling part of it. I need to feel valued. I need to be offering, you know, my opinion. I need to be offering myself as well. And I couldn't have had anyone better, because it's still in those opening few weeks when Steve come in, I was still thinking, I'm not sure, still felt a loyalty to the previous staff. It was still a difficult decision for me, but we just got on so well. We got on so well as individuals. We'd have a coffee and just chat about the challenges that are faced, that I've shared a little bit about missing home, about all of that side of it. And we just connected. And obviously what does help as well, you start winning games. You start winning games and you're enjoying it a little bit more, and you start ending up then being on a roll. And, you know, a decision was made probably in that first international break. So it would have been the October international break. Steve gave me a little bit of extra time off. So I think I had a full week off just to spend some time at home, think about things. We was going to have a chat whether I was going to leave, basically, or whether it was to carry on. And I made the decision then in that October. It was just phone call or FaceTime, probably with Steve it would have been, and just went, right, let's crack on. Let's give it a go till the end of the season. That was it. From that moment on, it was just, you know, all hands on it. Let's get cracking. Let's carry it on.
Pretty sure the game at Bristol City was in the October, so I don't know if you'd had this conversation to stay or not by then, but I wonder, was there a point where you thought something special was happening at the club? Because now we look back, it probably feels like that was the first sparks of it when Lyle scored those goals at Ashton Gate.
Yeah, that definitely for me was one of the biggest moments of the season. There's some great performances through the season, obviously the cup games, and you look at really polished promotion performances, like when we went to Blackpool Way and just, you know, just dismantled them, just ruthless, clinical. But I still do go back to that Bristol City game where something, I think not something changed, but there was a feeling of, you know, this could be anything. This could be the sparks. These could be the early signs of, you know, a little bit of luck as well. Because you look back at the winning goal and you think that could have easily been given as handball, you know, against Lyle. It looks, could have gone either way. So you need that bit of luck at times. But that moment, that night, in those conditions, away from home in a difficult place to go and win, you know, in a night game, it was, yeah, that was a big, big moment, and probably one of the biggest catalysts for what ended up being a, you know, a memorable year.
Us Forest fans like to think that Forest fans make a big difference. We're a lot louder than other crowds, and that atmosphere when it's really rocking does make a difference. Is that something you genuinely felt? I know Steve spoke about it a lot, but those cup games, the playoff semi-final second leg, you talk about Scotland and their fans. I mean, is the atmosphere at the City Ground up there with anything you've experienced?
Incredible. I've got to say incredible, but, you know, at the same time as well, I saw both sides of it, you know, towards the end with Chris. Mm. That was really tough time, you know, for everyone, and results weren't great. You know, the fans starting to drip back into the stadium, and then obviously we're allowing the bigger crowds in. So I can see how when things have not gone well, which obviously the club have had over long periods of time now, being out of the top flight, it's had some really difficult seasons within that. I can see how some players might struggle to play there, play at the City Ground with the expectation, with how the fans are. But you flip it the other way, when things are going well, oh my God, it was, you could all, what I used to do actually on a match day, I used to sort of look across at the other dugouts a lot of the time, just to see their reaction at the start of the game. When everyone's singing, everyone's, you know, on their feet, getting behind the team, I used to sometimes glance over. And I think sometimes you could tell, especially when it really got going. I think there's a lot of games where the opposition were beaten before the whistle was blown. You know, and that is, that is such a big strength. You know, the fans that are turning up in support, it was a packed house. It was just rocking. You're just going into games thinking, just can't see us not winning this game.
How do you turn that tide of fan negativity into positivity then? Because obviously you could say you win games, but the way Steve did it in forging that connection with the fans, it's like something I've not seen since Frank Clark, maybe Billy Davis 10 years ago. He was a big factor in turning that tide himself, wasn't he, in a sense?
Yeah, I think so. I think a big part of that was embracing the city, was embracing, obviously, the Miracle Men. We got to know them really well over the season. We're going to West Bridgeford, have a coffee or a couple of beers. You know, a couple of them might drop into the training ground, watch training after games. You know, Gary Bartles would be a regular in there, coming in for a beer after games, as many others would be. It's just embracing that. I think it also helps when you get off to a good start. I think it also helps, obviously, when Steve came in and we were rock bottom of the league. And then all of a sudden you win a couple of games and then you climb in and the hopes start to build. And then you win another couple of games and then you're climbing into mid-table. And then a momentum builds with that. And obviously how Steve is and how he speaks, you know, he's fantastic. You know, and everything that he says in the press, win or lose, how he talks about the club, how he talks about the fans, he talks about the players, all the details, you know, especially, you know, the Joe Worrell comment after the game at Wembley where he's talking about the manager FaceTiming him on his days off. Just going that extra mile with people, making people feel good about themselves, you know, making the fans feel good about the club again. And on top of that, it's no surprise when you end up on a run like that with all the details, with all the work going on behind the scenes.
What do you think of Bertels' shirts? He's on this all the time.
You know what? He's brilliant. He was brilliant. I used to bump into him through the Chris Hughton days, and then he's just a real decent bloke. Yeah. Loves the club. Real passionate about the club. You know, like used to love being in and around it. You know, it was always good to see a few of the lads, actually, the Miracle Men I'm talking about, that just get a taste of just being back in and around it again. You know, something that when you come out of football, that's probably the bit that you miss, because, you know, you hear about managers that have managed a club over the last 20 years or so. Some, I think, were probably a bit intimidated by the European Cups, by the legends, by, you know, all the memorabilia around the training ground or stadium. You know, Steve just embraced it, you know, used it to our advantage. We had, you know, videos, we had, you know, not just in the lead up to the final, but, you know, videos of what it means to play for the club and play for the city as well. You know, just little reminders and you know, informing the players, informing us all about the importance of what it means and the history.
Is Steve, perhaps it's an unfair question, is he the best man manager you've worked with then throughout your career?
It's hard to say because I've been lucky. I've been lucky to work, you know, I've worked under Steve Clarke, I've worked under Roy Hodgson. You know, even Chris, you know, my opinion, Chris was great at talking to players. He was great at leaving a player out, but he'd always give a reason. His door's always open. Whether you played one game or 10 and you were left out, Chris would pull you in and speak to you and give you reasons why. So can't knock him for that. But in terms of, I think for me personally, he was probably the one that allowed me to open up about this kind of stuff or the stuff that I'm doing now freely and openly in his office, chat about my worries and difficulties and challenges, you know, and he'd share one or two of his own, but we'd just have an open, almost like a check-in really. And I've never had that as a coach, that space that just allowed me to talk about that stuff, you know, not feeling judged, not feeling scared to do that. It just made me feel comfortable. And that's probably why, you know, we're still in touch regularly now, probably be friends now for the rest of our days because of that connection that we had together and as a group. But yeah, I probably avoided your question at the start. He's definitely one of the best in terms of just creating that culture and environment of everyone together, everyone given a space to tell you exactly how they feel without that judgment.
I guess there's more to him than that as well, because I think to it back to, was it the Derby game where you changed tactics after 20 minutes or something? And there was lots of games where he was really proactive with his subs. I mean, maybe that was you in his ear or the other guys, I don't know, but it had to all come together, didn't it, to get promoted? So much had to come together, I suppose.
Yeah, and a lot's made of Steve as a person and the stuff that we just spoke about the emotional side of it. But make no mistake, he's bloody top coach, tactically very good. You know, from day one, I remember a presentation around how we're going to play, and every single session that we did on the grass was, how do we play? We're not just putting on a possession or a passing drill or, you know, an exercise that's not related to either the opposition, how we play, or the development of the players. Everything had a reason. So it's not just, oh, Steve's a great guy, all of a sudden we're getting results. It's a clear way of playing, clear training methodology, tactically very good, tactically will change things early if need be, like you said in that Derby game. Sometimes we play a back four, sometimes we play a back three. So, you know, he's got the balance right. You know, I think sometimes it can be, oh, great guy, that's it. But behind that, yeah, you also need all the other, you know, bits. You need good staff, you need to delegate well, you need to have trust in, you know, myself, Alan Tate, Steve Rands, who used to, or still is obviously there, but great at the, you know, video work and analysis work, getting that department sorted. Everything just became a real slick operation.
Mm. Does he have the half-time nasty side, without giving too much away? Because you probably need a bit of that, not the hairdryer or whatever. He has that change of gear, does he, as well?
Definitely. Like, demanding on the training pitch. Again, you know, don't get sucked in by the, you know, the great bit of press and real good guy, so demanding on the training pitch. If the session weren't right, he would speak to me, would speak to Tatey, you know, what were you thinking with that session? Not what you're thinking with that,
yeah,
but
I know what you mean, yeah.
Did it work? Why have you done it? I don't know if we'll use that one, whatever it might be, but it's the same with the players. You know, pass it, just simple passes. If it's not right, he was on them and is on them. Really demanding in every single session that we, you know, that we did. And if might be a player in a session not quite at it, it'd be a conversation after training. So yeah, good balance in you know, the good and bad guy, definitely, but so demanding. Oh yeah, it, whether it be half time, and to be honest, it weren't really often needed at half time. When it was needed, it would be used. So sometimes Steve might deliver that bit and then Tatey, assistant, or myself might then deliver some of the tactical information at halftime because we had the screen in and we can talk through it. But yeah, he's got that nasty side to him as well.
Mm. So when you talk about those intricacies and player relationships and knowing if a player's not at it in a session, you fast forward to this season, you've got 23 new players. And you probably don't know if a player's at it in a session or not because you don't really know the guy and you've got that times 23. When you look at that from a coaching point of view, we always say on this podcast, oh, that's a big challenge, and it kind of becomes a catchphrase. But can you kind of put into context how big a challenge it is to meld that group?
Massive. And sometimes it's difficult for fans sometimes to see it because they see the big money being spent. They see the wages. They see 20 players gone, off you go. But I think one of the most difficult things from the outside looking in would be you're sort of learning on the job as well in the Premier League, toughest league in the world. You know, players were coming in all the way up to the end of the window and the season's underway. You can't just, you know, play a friendly match and play two teams for 45 minutes each. You're almost trying out formations, trying out new players on the job in the Premier League, which is a real challenge. I can only liken it a little bit to, in a sense, but not, would be the international side with Scotland. Was you get these players sort of together, some that have new completely into the team, and you've got a game in 2 or 3 days. You've just not got the time to deliver all your coaching sessions, to get all the detail that you want to get in such a short period of time. And it is taking time. And obviously fantastic that the club have stick with him, stuck by him, new contracts. I think that's settled everyone down. And there's no surprise now that you're seeing an upturn in, you know, results, performances, you know, learning as well. You're looking at some of the performances recently and almost shut the door and stopped leaking so many goals. Look a lot more solid in the approach. And alongside that, it's not only the change, but it's also the players that have been there a little bit longer now, week to week, more training, more video work, more unit work, more individual work. So it does take time, but it's actually good to see that patience was there.
How important were the players who were there last season then? Because it became quite a small group. As Cook, McKenna, Brennan, Yatesy, Joe, I think that was Sam Storage, that's about it really, that was left. How important was that group to their chances this season?
Yeah, massive. Not only just as lads and personalities, but the qualities that they brought last season. I think looking at this season as well, I've seen Yatesy kind of back in there, finding his feet now at Premier League level. You know, obviously Cookie, you've got that sort of spine almost of the players that, you know, in terms of centre-back, centre-midfielder, still got obviously Brennan. But they've also got that connection to last season, connection to the city, because, you know, new players coming in wouldn't really be aware of too much of what was created last season. That 6-7 month period where the city just kind of took off. All the new players coming in, it was really important that you still had those core players in it. And I think at times they maybe try to go in and get some of the players that did it last season as well, like Jimmy and, you know, Jed obviously went to Tottenham and Keenan. You almost want to keep that together as much as you can. It's important not to lose that spirit of what was created last season. So I think that was crucial. It's crucial that they're still playing a big part in the dressing room because, you know, 20 plus new players coming in, that can be a real, you know, real challenge, that's for sure.
True. How pleased are you for Yates, who's one I was going to ask you about, as a midfielder who's made that step up to the Premier League? You were going from Millwall to Blackburn, would it have been? I don't know. To have that belief in yourself that he's shown that he can compete when he's had doubters as well, how pleased are you for him?
Yeah, just love him. Just absolutely love Yates. Every day gives his best. Every day, first on the training field. Every day wants to get better. Every day wants to learn. Got the heart of a lion. He's just everything that you want as a coach in one of your players. Obviously now he's in a good place. Obviously he's at times had a difficult, I think it'd be fair to say, had a mixed reaction from sections of the support over the years. I think it's taken a while for some to fully, you know, believe in him and believe he's the real deal. But it's no surprise that he gets his games in constantly, no matter what manager it is. He always ends up getting his games in. Really important. It's just an important person to have around, not just player, but just leading by example. Just will put his foot in, will do the ugly bits, will go and get his head on a set plate. Like last season, I was on attacking set plays last season. And what we used to do, every set play, every player that went in the box for a set play had to put a tenner in every week to into the pot. Mm. So Yatesy ended up picking the pot up about seven or eight. I think he scored seven from set plays last season. But yeah. Typically Yatesy, whenever he won the pot, straight into the kitchen at the training ground and letting the kitchen staff share it amongst themselves. That just gives you a little insight into what he's all about.
Is Joe the same with that kind of warrior spirit, I suppose?
Yeah, Joe, yeah, he's... The club means so much to him, Joe. You know, I think at times that can carry a weight in itself. You know, speaking as an ex-player and a coach and talking about expectations, but it means so much to him. You know, big Nottingham Forest family, you know, been around and in and around the area for his whole life, and Yatesy and Brennan, they obviously been through the whole academy system. But yeah, Joe's the same, and last season especially. I've not you know, watched every single game this season, but speaking of working with him last season, he ended up just becoming a Rolls Royce last season at centre back. I think as the season went on, we saw him grow as a player and as a leader. You know, started off a little bit like we all did, you know, start of last season when things weren't going great. But as the season went on, he started becoming that leader, started demanding of others. But I also think Steve Cook's introduction in January helped that. You know, when he got put in between Scott McKenna and Joe, I think learning from an experienced centre-back that's played a couple of hundred games plus in the Premier League helped Joe's development as well. You know, that experienced one in the middle of the two younger ones either side, I think that was a big help. Yeah, he was top draw last season. Obviously, this season been a bit of a trickier one for Joe. Started in and then had the spell out the team as well, and then back in for a decent result. So, yeah, but it's another experience for him. Massive step up, and one that's, you know, obviously going to be a real challenge, but a great one for him.
And just on Brennan as well, I mean, he's a different kind of character, I take it, very quiet, but he must have that inner steel because his stock's risen so high, and he's had his critics a little bit this season, but now he's at the World Cup as well. I mean, tell us a bit about him and what do you think this World Cup can do for him as well?
Yeah, he's a quieter one, Brennan, but what I loved about him and working with him is just you can just tell he's just got that real toughness, that inner steel about him, that fearless one that, you know, if I look back at my sort of playing career, there's only a couple that I've seen that have had that at a young age. You know, Phil Jones, probably one when I was at Blackburn, made his debut at 19 against Chelsea and goes on and unfortunately injuries, but just fearless. You know, and Brennan's the same. Even watching him come on last night for Wales, as soon as he gets it, wants to make something happen, wants to be direct. You know, so many big moments last season that he produced on the biggest stage, just absolutely lapped it up, just couldn't wait for the next game, just always wanting to make a difference. You know, when I speak to players now, I think I was definitely one. I'd dwell on maybe giving the ball away for the last two or three times that I've had it, but Brennan wouldn't care. Next time it comes to him, he'd want to make something happen again. And so many big moments. You know, I think if there's one, you know, bit of learning, it would be just trying to have that impact over a 90-minute game on a more regular basis, because it was unbelievable moments all the time last season. I think it's probably just getting him to just put it all together over a whole piece.
What chance do you give Forest of staying up? Because I look at every team on paper and they've always got someone who says, he's a great player, he's a great player. The Premier League's so tough, isn't it? Have they got a decent shot still?
Massive, massive shot to stay up. I think if I look back at when I was at Crystal Palace and remember the season, started seven defeats, not even scored a goal when I went in with Roy Hodgson at Crystal Palace. But the one thing that was in our favour even then. Everyone was thinking we're doomed. I was looking at the league table thinking, well, if we win one game, we're still only 3 points adrift. You know, at no point has Forest been really detached from it. You know, especially now after the recent run, just well in the mix in a team that's now hopefully getting through that transitional period with the amount of players that have come in. You're actually starting to see the shoots now of what could be against, obviously, you're looking at the Liverpool game in particular. I think a big, and again, link it back with my time at Palace, it was a win against Chelsea, which seemed to kickstart our season that year into being a really good one and finishing mid-table. So I think that you can't underestimate what that win against Liverpool, top team, will do for the team firstly, but the whole club, and just building that belief that they can do it, which they obviously can. They're proving that in the last couple of games.
Just lastly then, it's great to hear you speak with that kind of passion about Forest, but also the individuals around the club. Do you think, are you done now with on the grass day-to-day coaching, or is this a different way for you to kind of siphon off that passion in a different area of the game for you now?
Yeah, for now, I think it's just explore this a little bit more. I think at some stage, who knows, whether it might be a year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever it might be, I'm still not sure. I'm still enjoying this time to kind of just do some other stuff as well. Left school at 16 and for 25 years being at it in football, playing, coaching, you know, going through some challenges and difficult times without just trying something else or exploring what else I enjoy doing. And I've sort of found that place at the minute, enjoying the family time. The kids are still just at an age, probably got on for another couple of years before they start drifting and starting to do their own thing. So I'm enjoying that time. I'm enjoying reconnecting with friends and family. I'm enjoying being at home, because I was renting in Melton Mowbray for the two seasons that I was at Forest, home one day a week. You know, it's a real challenge for me. And, you know, I think I owe it to them a little bit as well. Obviously backed me all the way through my career, stuck by me, sacrificed a lot themselves. So I'm actually enjoying this time to kind of give them a bit of me back as well. But who knows? I'm going to explore this journey and enjoying what I'm doing, but there's still that possibility. And by the way, if that was to happen, you know, I'd love it to be, you know, with someone like Steve Cooper, if not Steve Cooper again, that's for sure.
Would you want to be a manager? Because I look at management and think it's either the promotion or the payoff, and there's not much else good about it because you're going to get the sack eventually. Is it something that attracts you still, or is it just coaching potentially?
Yeah, there's a lot about that week against Huddersfield that I preferred in my coaching journey. Mm. You know, knowing exactly what I'm doing the night before training, know exactly what I want the team to look like at the weekend, and it's mine, and just going with it, not having to clear it, not having to sort of ask the manager or discuss it. Or I just went into that. As soon as I made the decision to, you know, to stay on and take the game, I just knew exactly, I knew how they played. I knew what I wanted us to be, and I just went with it. And there was no doubt. There was no second guessing. There was no outside influence. It was just my decision, which actually felt more comfortable. But bloody hell, did I need some sleep after that Huddersfield game? I'm like, that was a stressful few days. Bouncing headache. I probably had 10 hours sleep spread over the three or four nights that I had the job and took the game. So, yeah, I think we'll wait and see on that one. But there was a lot that I preferred. But you've got to balance that up with actually your own well-being as well.
I've only scraped the surface with you, but I think we'll have to leave it there because the hour is pretty much up. But Stephen, thanks so much for doing that. I hope you enjoyed it.
No, I did. Great. Do you know what? It, just a memorable, you know, it was an up and down, obviously, a couple of years, but last season was just ridiculous, wasn't it? Really. It was just unbelievable. Whether we'll see something like that again for a long period of time. I'm not sure. You know, bottom of the league after eight games to go on that run and to finish it off. Obviously, we don't feel it when you're in a playoffs, but to do it playoff final at Wembley, I mean, it's not a bad way to go out, that's for sure.
No, certainly not. I mean, those 23 years, that pent-up emotion. We've said this before, but I'm not sure it's quite worth the 23 years, but it, perhaps in that moment of the final whistle, it did feel like it. It's like, aside from, you know, my marriage and my kids, best day of my life. And yeah, I'm glad it was up there for you as well, certainly.
Absolutely brilliant. Great memories.
Excellent. We'll leave it there. Thanks to everyone who's watched along as ever. If you enjoyed it, do like and subscribe. We'll be back next week. I've got a few more really interesting interviews, but it'll do well to top this one. So thanks very much, everyone. Enjoy your week, and we shall see you soon.